District 49, Side 1, House Judiciary Committee, Special Subcommittee, April 19, 1979, 3 p.m., Room 354, Work Session on House Bill 2198, 2773, and 2936.
Special Subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee will come to order.
Okay. Let me make a little statement.
All members are present.
Mr. Chairman, my apologies that I have literally not even taken time for lunch today, and I had to speak with my committee administrator. My apologies.
We'll take that under advisement.
Am I going to get tabled?
You're going to get tabled.
Okay. No.
One thing you'll notice throughout the event is that other than Steve, most of the people who you would think would be at a meeting like this aren't here. Ed Hazen had to be up in Multnomah County and couldn't be here. Jerry Orr and Robin O'Brien couldn't be here.
And Prineville.
And Prineville. However, all of those people got copies of the bill, went over the bill personally with me, and told me that they'd like a little bit more time to digest it. Well, functionally speaking, that's fine because we can't do anything on it tomorrow. Because the agenda for tomorrow is set, all of next week is set, so what we're aiming toward is the beginning of the week after. The objective today is just to satisfy yourselves that this is an adequate work product for the subcommittee. I believe that it is. Bob Lundy's here because he wrote it, and I'm real pleased with it technically. And I think what we ought to do is just walk you through it and see if you're satisfied with it.
Let's take it at a light jog then.
Okay.
Do you think it's fair that you get special consideration for you, for those lobbyists that do have enough interest in your attendance?
Sure.
Absolutely.
I have to be very cautious in giving the lobbyists at the bar any special consideration.
That's true.
I've noticed that.
The point of this bill is that I took Bob, the outline of what we needed, and Bob put together a massively coordinated, rewritten, cleaned up statute that you can see before you. It starts out by, well, 135.055 is on the first page. That's the section that sets up the procedure for payment for court-appointed counsel in indigent cases. And then all the rest of the sections keep referring back to it. Rather than repeating it, they just cross-refer back. The gist of it is that there'll be $40 an hour for time in court, $30 an hour for time out of court. There's a $2,000 limit for felonies, $1,000 for misdemeanors, and $1,000 for anything else, which would include civil commitment, juvenile, habeas corpus, and all of those limits may be overridden in exceptional cases. At the bottom of page 2, you have the language which speaks about expenses. You'll see throughout the bill that compensation, meaning attorney fees, and expenses, meaning everything else, is allowed subject to the procedures set out. Something new that we just dreamed up on page 3, lines 17 through 26, and which may make the bill more saleable to the counties, is that if the court finds that the defendant at the end of the case has sufficient resources to at least contribute to the cost of the court-appointed counsel, the court may order that person to pay whatever the court finds he can afford to the appropriate officer of the county to receive those kinds of payments. So the county has at least the possibility of getting some money back out of it.
Representative Cohen.
I just want to make doubly sure that we're not mandating that. I had opportunity to talk with our county court administrator today, and he was very concerned about it, saying that the track record in most cases with kind of trying to collect those things is that you pay more in administrative expenses and you have to hire more bureaucratic people than you do if you didn't have it in there at all. And I just want to make sure that it is absolutely permissive and that we're not.
Permissive.
Very permissive.
Yeah.
Line 25 says nay.
Right.
Okay, now, for clarity, Robin O'Brien and Jerry Orrick got a version of the bill which did not include lines 21 through 23. That's the new sentence that came in this morning. It's not going to make any difference. It's not going to change anything.
You say it on page 3.
Yeah, okay.
But I have to get that language to them.
Okay.
Okay, on page 4, 138-500 is just cross-referencing. And you'll see throughout the bill that you've got the language about suitable counsel possessing skills and experience. That's from the other bill that you remember.
Is this on the 2199?
I can't say. I can't say. I don't think it does. I'm paging through this thing now. I'm over to page 6, 7, another cross-reference to appellate counsel. I get you over on page 8.
Let's stop on 7 just for a second. Right. And point that out a little more.
Okay, 138-590 provides for...
At line 15, okay.
Counsel on appeal, doesn't it? Post-conviction relief. And because that's the situation in which you've got an indigent defendant facing incarceration, it's appropriate that that section be in the bill. And as much as it's appropriate, it's got to be in the format that Bob drew up.
Yes, Representative.
Who's paying for post-conviction representation right now?
Bob, is it county?
The county from whence the case came.
This section is trial level post-conviction. Appeal post-conviction is covered in the previous section, which applies both to regular criminal appeals and appeals from post-conviction.
Can you refer us back, Bob, to appeal post-conviction? That
appeal post-conviction starts on page 4, section 3, 138-500.
Okay, I want to label these so I know what they...
Yeah, you'll note in lines 18, 19, basically, it says if a defendant in a criminal action or petitioner in a proceeding under this series, which is post-conviction.
Okay.
Is that okay? Mm-hmm.
We're through at page 7 then, Dan.
Okay. Page 8 is the continuation of that section. Page 9 is also. Page 10, at line 6, begins the Psychiatric Security Review Board. And there are no meaningful changes until you get to page 12.
Okay, just to pause there for a minute. Section 5, beginning on page 10, at line 6, is the Psychiatric Review Security Review Board provision.
Right.
Okay.
However, on page 12, you actually get into it.
At line 17?
Yes. Again, it's parallel. It's going to be parallel throughout the bill. It says that you get a suitable counsel, and when the suitable counsel performs, services be paid in the manner provided in 138-500.
Okay, I have a question. Is the Psychiatric Review Board basically an administrative hearing whose decisions are reviewed then judicially?
That is true, and the provision for counsel and an expenses here is only on the judicial review.
Okay, why isn't it before the Psychiatric Review Board itself?
Wasn't in the draft, I guess.
What?
This does not apply to the administrative hearing.
This is not a lawyer for administrative hearing.
I suppose one reason you can consider why it maybe should not be is because that is essentially, I suppose, a medical type proceeding. The other possibility is there already may be counsel. The person is already charged with crime.
Is this the procedure that we established for the periodic reviews for people who are committed? Is that what that board is?
This is not guilty by reason of insanity group.
No. It's not that.
Yeah. Yeah, the Psychiatric Review Board is not guilty by reason of insanity.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought it was the one that was set up for periodically anybody who's committed to a mental institution gets an automatic review.
They do that review function too, though.
Yeah, they do a review function. That's correct. correct, but this is the NBI. That's the point of that board. And your question is a good one, but when the member of the board came in to our committee earlier this week, Jeff Rogers, he didn't say there was any need for funding or authorization to pay attorneys before the board. And when the fellow, Steve Gorham, mm-hmm. who is one of the three attorneys in the state who actually represents people before that board, when he brought the issue forward, he didn't say that there was any need for money or for authorization for payment at the administrative level. He only said upon appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So we took his word on it. That's the answer.
Okay, there is a provision. At the hearing, at the administrative hearing stage, which provides the notice of the person going to substitute, it does say the statement of the right to consult with the legal counsel and is indigent to have legal counsel provided without cost.
Right. But I don't. So the legal counsel would be provided without
yeah.
cost. The cost would be paid by the review board
mm-hmm.
according to its own rules.
Mm-hmm.
It would not be bound by the $40 and $30.
The county wouldn't pay it, I gather, either.
I gather that's board. Right.
Well, I'd like to leave that as a question mark for right now because I'm not sure who pays it. And I'd be interested to know on what basis they're honoring it because we're changing virtually everything else.
Okay, I'll find out.
And it seems awkward to go from what would be a judicial proceeding into an administrative proceeding, which could lead to a further judicial proceeding,
right.
and have an attorney paid from different people at three different places.
And the board essentially is paying agency.
Yeah.
They pay it from their budget.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. I just put a question mark
but
on for further discussion.
Good question.
Okay.
Okay, on page 13. Line 17, appeal from juvenile proceedings. No, is this appeal? No, this is just juvenile. Yeah, this is juvenile hearing. And the juvenile counsel would be paid according to 135.055. Okay?
In the juvenile case, it has that little slight difference if the court first determines whether the parent or the child's state. Pay for the child counsel and then if it determines that they can't, in effect, an indigent parent or an indigent state, then you go to the county paying for it.
Okay, the reason that's different from any other section is that that's very close to what the existing juvenile law is, and rather than depart from the juvenile law. No, not that much.
I know, but I'm just getting down to that to see how it fits.
It's a little bit of a difference, but it, I think Bob's intention was to do the least violence possible to existing law while conforming the various sections as well.
I think this is generally policy now. The court, in all cases, if it can find a willing and capable parent, is going to seek the parent's support. And the parents are oftentimes ordered to make restitution, so.
In some instances, in a juvenile type proceeding, but there may be an occasion to appoint counsel for a parent.
That's right. I've had that happen frequently, where you're appointing one for both.
Especially if you're going to terminate the recovery.
In which case, the county has the burden of paying for two attorneys, plus the district attorney is paying for all the attorneys.
Okay. On page 15, we have, line 15, the beginning of the section 7, payment for counsel and juvenile appeal. Form as always.
Okay.
On page 16, line 20, we have payment for counsel and civil commitment at the hearing level.
Let me just catch up with you there.
That's 16, civil commitment.
Starting
the bottom.
Section 8?
Yes. Yeah,
section 8 is the mental commitment.
The mentally ill. There's another one on
that. We don't get that.
Oh, no.
The old military, Section 8?
Yeah, I get it.
What
Section 8 is known.
Mental illness discharge?
I thought there's something about that.
Unfortunately.
That takes you over to page 18. Section 10 is payment on appeal from civil commitment. That's new. That's one that Oric raised his eyebrows a little bit about, but I can't see any justifiable basis for objecting to an attorney on appeal if you allow the attorney below and you allow attorneys in all the other situations that are in existing law.
Which line are you starting on?
Section 10.
Okay.
Page 18.
Okay.
Existing law doesn't provide attorneys on appeal to civil commitment. I don't know why. But under the theory of the bill, they should be allowed. So Bob drafted it as new material. That pattern will be picked up again. On page 18 toward the bottom, you get counsel in the case of mental deficiency, retardation. That is in the existing law, and we're just cleaning up and conforming it. But then when you flip over to page 19, the bottom, section 13, there is no current provision for court-appointed counsel on appeal from a determination of mental deficiency, so we made up a new one.
And where does that appear?
At the bottom of page 19, top of page 20.
Okay.
Section 13, excuse me, is all new then.
That's all new. As near as I can tell, there aren't very many certifications of mental deficiency that are appealed from, and so the dollar impact here probably wouldn't be very much. That brings you to the last page of the bill, section 15, that's the habeas corpus. And as an outgrowth of our last meeting, there was a question about, well, how shall we handle habeas corpus? Shall we say that anybody who feels he has a right to bring a petition for habeas corpus automatically gets a court-appointed attorney? We decided against that. So what we decided was that we'll be silent on who gets one and who doesn't get one, but if the court appoints one, then there is, this is the provision that allows the court-appointed attorney to be paid.
Yes, Professor Richard.
I've been visiting the penitentiary for quite a while now, and every time I go over there, I hear about a new habeas corpus problem.
Right.
And I would say the vast majority of them are handled by the state public defender.
They have a, I don't know what is still going on, but there was a special funding done to provide legal services for inmates. They call it that in 75, something like that.
Prison legal services.
Pardon me?
Prison legal services.
Yeah. But
well, I'm not sure that's it. I think it's
well, whatever it is, but the reason for it was that they were filing these petitions by themselves and the court
right.
couldn't even, it's really cluttering up the court, so we thought it was better than have some of the legal training prepared for it. There is a great volume of them, and
that brings up a question in my mind then, Bob. Should there be some language of being in section 15 that says that it doesn't apply to the public defender?
Statute. Dealing with the public defender says that you can't appear in habeas corpus. You can only appear in post conviction.
Okay.
For people who are under the custody of the correction division.
I might raise one other concern about habeas corpus, and that is that in some domestic relations situations where a child has been absconded with by one party or the other and there's some danger to the child, one method of retrieving the child by the court is a writ of habeas corpus.
Right.
And I'm trying to imagine being in a court-appointed situation, domestic relations counsel, and that would be a necessary procedure to carry out, but I suppose that'd be all under the charge of court-appointed counsel for
the day. The way section 15 is presently written, that would apply
only
to
criminal.
Habeas corpus.
Yeah.
In the case of a charge or a conviction of crime.
Right, I see that, and that's why I'm raising it today.
That's partly because there is a present procedure in the habeas corpus that permits that type of a person in prison, that is on a charge or conviction of a crime, to file or have his petition for habeas corpus filed without paying filing fees. Same terminology there.
I don't think the domestic relations thing is a big enough concern. it's very rare that it's used, and it would be in the course of normal.
What if you miss out? I'll always try to enforce a foreign judgment for a family that left the state, and therefore they're not under the jurisdiction of that court, and they bring a child into another state, and that's what the problem is. And ordinarily, if somebody's retained an attorney and done all that expense, they usually have the plan.
This is clearly criminal only. I would raise one other question as long as we're right at this part of the act. Do you want to go ahead and...
No, I'm finished.
I wanted to talk about the effective date, since there's no... The constitutional date may be too soon, and I'm wondering if, as a gesture to the counties and other persons, that for budgetary reasons we might want to start this up on a fiscal year basis, 1980. In other words, if they start paying out July 1 of 1980, that this ought to be in their budget.
I wonder if perhaps we shouldn't leave that for Ways and Means, Representative Smith, because this is their number one priority for that state funding, is for indigent defendants.
2002.
Yeah.
Right. And so I would gather it would depend upon when the state's going to fund it. Now, if it's as of July 1 of 1980, that's what they're talking about, then I think it would be appropriate. I don't know when they're going to put their appropriations, but they're going to go on.
Well, I wonder if, just to raise that issue with Ways and Means, we couldn't just put in the effective date shall be blank.
Yeah, that'd be.
Okay.
Their appropriation is going to be for all other appropriations be for as of July 1 of this year.
Okay.
And I don't know why the state would have a unique thing on it.
You're dealing with local government. When you put July 1 of this year, their budgeting process is going on there.
So
we're coming into changes and things maybe.
Well, that's what I'm a little concerned about.
I'm concerned about lumping this in then.
I'm not suggesting that that's the date that should be in there. I think putting a blank date is desirable.
I have concern about putting that in either in the middle of their budgeting year or without enough lead times, and if they're really taking time to evaluate it with the bar in that county about where they really want to be.
Well, I would move that at Section 17 be added the effective date of this, is this an act? Would be blank, just to raise the issue with Ways and Means.
Can you prepare that?
I'll have to use before. I'm assuming an effective date after the normal effective date.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to move it up earlier from the 90 days, you'd have to write it differently, but I will assume it later.
And July 1, 1979 would certainly be sooner than, you'd have to have an emergency clause then.
Well, that should be the emergency clause.
So
if all you're trying to do is merely raise the issue that there should be some date, whatever it is, it really doesn't make much difference which form I use. It being in there will raise the issue.
Okay. Do I hear any objection to the chair's motion? There being none. So ordered. Questions of council or of the committee by anyone? Representative Richard.
It's a pretty lengthy term. I have, first of all, some concern that are we going immediately to a referral to Ways and Means?
No. Discussions I've had with committee council, I think the best thing to do would be for this special subcommittee, to basically disband upon referring this to the full committee. And then for those persons who could not be here today, allow sufficient time, at least a week or more, before this comes up in full committee so that they can come to work session before the full committee and bring us their comments. So I think it'll be...
Sandy's question remains. Should it doesn't have a subsequent referral waiting room. It doesn't have one. I guess your question is, should there be one?
I thought she asked if this were going directly to Ways and Means.
Oh.
I see. Okay.
That's for you to decide.
Are the interested parties who have assisted us
any of them recommending raising local government bodies?
Keith?
Chair, as a practical matter, I think it ought to go
from
the Judiciary Committee to the Ways and Means Committee. Because ultimately, they're going to make the decision on this.
Yeah.
And they expect it. I've talked to Senator Ripper about it, and I wanted to talk to him primarily because I wanted to tell him the kind of figures, the ballpark figures I thought was going to be in here. I didn't want to go down there and have great screams of anguish. And it was going to be, I wanted to come and tell the committee that's what they can anticipate. But he assured me that that would not be the reaction, not saying that he's committed to these figures, but they aren't going to be jumping up and down when the bill comes in there with those figures in there. And that's the reason I contacted. So they do expect the bill directly from the Judiciary Committee. That would be the normal process.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Richards has moved that there be a subsequent referral to Ways and Means of this proposed draft. Any objection? So ordered. Further work to the subcommittee?
I don't think so. One comment I would like to make is that I've made this to Keith and perhaps some of you. Even if you change the dollar figure from 40 and 30 down to $2 and $1, and made the funding part of it moot, the rest of the bill, the work that Bob has done, I think is so well done that I think the bill would not want to die in Ways and Means. It's still a good bill. Even with no money attached, it's still a good bill.
I would like to compliment the subcommittee and council and legislative council for the excellent job and the time you made on the bill. And you can be assured that we're very serious about it. You're going to have a lot of support from people I represent.
Yes,
it's not unheard of for a substantive committee to convey the committee report with an additional letter of sentiment to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I would move that we present for consideration by the full committee a letter addressing the redrafting of the indigent defense section of the statutes and the merit that it bears, irrespective of the dollar amount decisions that Ways and Means might make for this. Full committee can consider the letter as recommendation that Ways and Means not allow the bill to die there just for purposes of lack of money, but
that is the longest motion I've ever heard. But in essence, I think Representative Richards has moved that we recommend to the full committee that should it pass this down to Ways and Means, with a due pass recommendation, it go with a letter from our committee supporting the concept of the bill.
Right.
Is there any objection? So ordered. I think we do need to take formal action to send it to the full committee yet.
Oh, you're right.
The chair will move that the draft and the amendments that we've discussed and passed before us right now, entitled Rough Draft LC XXXX of April 13, 1979, be forwarded to the full Judiciary Committee with a recommendation that be passed. Is there any objection? Representative Richards.
Having only just seen the several committee draft, I would withhold my final 100% approval and would like to express my concern that we have a very long bill here that the general membership usually frowns on.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take some careful explanation.
I would agree with you.
The one thing that does not include at this point is the application of the new language on page 3, line 17-23, that is that sort of post-proceeding court redetermination of indigency. If that is to apply to every one of the other proceedings, both trial level and appeal level, and so forth, they will be necessary to add to each one of those sections another sentence doing that. The question I have is whether you think this should be the kind of thing that, for example, should only apply at the trial level or should also apply at the appeal level or whatever. But in order to pick up this new subsection 6 of 135.060 and have it apply to all of the other kinds of proceedings that are governed in the draft, it will be necessary to add another sentence to every hospital run inspection. One could say that it really wouldn't be necessary. For example, Section 2, which amends 138-490, and only deals with a case where a previous counsel is joined by the public defender in a case in which the public defender is involved, and the previous counsel then, for his joining, gets some additional compensation. You might not want to have the court have to make a redetermination in that instance, because the public defender is into it. The court originally made a determination for former counsel. The court will make another determination for the public defender, and maybe that's enough determination by the court.
As long as we raise the question, why don't we take that to the full committee as a policy question and say it was unresolved?
To understand at this point that everything in the first section is not picked up in all the other proceedings, and the one thing that is not picked up is the post-proceeding court redetermination.
Any final comments?
You're a good comedian.
Good. Well, thank you. I appreciate working with the community.
That's on the page.
We're adjourned.